that just like the Lord, so very much like Jesus. So
this is Larry Jones. You are listening to the Grace and Glory Hour of the Dyer Baptist Church with our co-pastors, David M. Atkinson and Dr. Lee Atkinson. We are coming to you from Dyer, Indiana. Our prayer is that you will be strengthened by the word today. Now, here is our pastor.
While we're getting the outlines out, let's just be reminded that our theme is covenant relationships. Covenant relationships, loyalty and integrity in relationships. Covenant relationships, loyalty and integrity in relationships. We're actually going to be jumping in at the middle of the second page you received last week. I repeat, we're coming in at the middle of the second page that we received last week. Only now we've added the blanks, all right? So there's going to be some overlap. There were no blanks in last week's handout, but now we're adding the blanks. Middle of the second page we received last week. And if we do not finish on a given week, bring the sheet back, all right? If we don't finish, which will be the case most of the time, right? You know me too well. So if we don't finish, please just fold the sheet in the front of your Bible and bring it back till we're done with that material, and then you can put it in your three-ring binder to keep. Now, at the end of the last lesson, we were saying that words evolve. To use the word evolution for etymology, the study and meaning of words, to use the word evolution in etymology, the development of words is not a bad thing. That's exactly what happens to words. They start in one place, and as the culture shifts, the meaning of the words shift. And so word studies are fascinating, and sometimes words, and especially their derivation, can have an uncertain meaning. And last week we looked at the word fix, and we saw that the word fix has something like 7 or 8 meanings, rather different meanings, a wide spectrum of meanings depending on context. And this brings us to the current definition. Note that I said the current definition of the word covenant. A covenant, in current understanding, is a will, a testament, as in your last will and testament, or a legal document between two partners that denotes an irrevocable decision, which normally, I say normally because our culture today is so loose, and you're going to find out in just a few moments that the word covenant is not nearly as forceful and binding today as it's been understood for millennia. But normally, back when agreements really meant something, back when a man's word was his bond, covenants were considered to be those agreements which could not be canceled by anyone. Now, in the Old Testament Hebrew, the word is usually berith. Say that with me. Berith. Oh, say it again. Berith. And bereath means a cutting or a compact made by passing between or through pieces of flesh. That's just so significant as we think of the life of Abraham. And so in the Hebrew, bereath is a cutting, an agreement or a compact made by passing through or between pieces of flesh. And if there are pieces of flesh, blood has been shed. True. If there are pieces of flesh, blood has been shed to arrive at a situation where you have pieces of flesh. Now, in the New Testament Greek, the word in the Authorized Translation covenant, the Greek word is often, usually, not always, but usually when you see covenant in the New Testament, it's our translation of the Greek word diatheke, diatheke. The prefix dia, now think of words and prefixes. The prefix dia means literally through, throughout, across, or entirely. Think of diameter. Greek dia, we get diameter, across, through, throughout the circle. Dia or diameter. And so that's the prefix. And then the next part of diatheke is the Greek word theike, theike, which means a repository. A repository. A place in which to put something, such as a barn or a granary or even a sheath. You see the wide variety there. But what is in common? Well, it's a place into which you put something for safety or security. Hence, a covenant is a commitment or an agreement. A covenant is a commitment into which parties enter for mutual safety, security, and blessing. I have this sword which was given to me, and I cherish it. So here is the sword, and I'm going to put the sword dia through, across, throughout the sheath to keep the blade, the edges of the sword safe. This is a sheath. It is a repository for the sword, and it is to ensure safety and security for the sword. And so a covenant is a relationship into which two parties enter for the security and the safety of that relationship. And Miss Prather and Maxim are going to be married in a few weeks, and they're going to enter into covenant. They're going to put their promises, their agreement, into the sheath of the marriage covenant to secure it, make it safe, and make it binding. Isn't that beautiful? That's just so beautiful. And so, in the definition on the handout from last week, a covenant is like a sheath that protects the security of a relationship. And then, of course, the word loyalty, that's less complicated. Loyalty is the quality or state or an instance of being faithful in allegiance and affection. Loyalty is the quality or state or an instance of being faithful in allegiance or affection and integrity. Oh, I like that word. We're talking about covenant relationships and loyalty and integrity. Integrity is a firm adherence to a code of moral values, a firm adherence to a code of moral values, or a sound unimpaired, complete, undivided condition. Integrity is a sound, unimpaired, complete, undivided condition. Now, please put the next two references down. They are not in your notes. Really, I'm not bragging. I'm thanking others. So much material is tumbling in on me from so many different directions that I've added things since today's lesson was printed. So put these references down. They are not in your notes. They're very important. We're going to turn first to John 6. John 6:51. And I'd like us to read responsively, please, John 6:51-57. And read with fervency and read loud. We're going to read John 6:51-57. Jesus is speaking, and I will start with John 6:51, and then we'll read every other verse, and we'll read 57 in unison. Jesus said, "I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If any man eat of this bread, he shall live forever. And the bread that I will give is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world." The Jews then Jesus said unto them, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, except ye eat the flesh of the Son of Man," now watch it, "and drink his blood." This is a serious, serious relationship that Jesus is describing. This is serious talk. "Except ye drink the blood of the Son of Man, ye have no life in you. For my flesh is meat indeed, and my blood is drink indeed.
He that eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood dwelleth in me, and I am in him.
As the living Father hath sent me, and I live by the Father, so he that eateth me, even he shall live by me." Now the early church faced the charges of cannibalism. They faced the charges of cannibalism. Now we know that Christians have never practiced cannibalism, but we're going to see in this series more of why Jesus used this language and how very serious he was about covenant relationship. Now let's go, please, to 1 Corinthians 11. 1 Corinthians 11. 1 Corinthians 11, we'll read in unison, verses 24 through 26. We'll just do this in unison. It's short. I want to point something out. If you have a red letter edition of the Scriptures, what does that mean? If you have words in red in the New Testament. Yes, if it's a red letter edition of the New Testament, then the words in red are the words of Jesus. Let's read in unison, please, 11:24-26. "And when he had given thanks, he brake and said, Take, eat, this is my body, which is broken for you. This do in remembrance of me. After the same manner also, he took the cup, when he had supped, saying, This cup is the New Testament in my blood. This do ye, as oft as ye drink it, in remembrance of me. For as often as ye eat this bread and drink this cup, ye do show the Lord's death till he come." In the middle of 25, we see Jesus saying, this cup is the New Testament or the New Covenant. Say that with me. New covenant in what? New covenant in my blood. This do ye as oft as ye drink it in remembrance of me. Now, our Lord has made the whole thing, of our being in fellowship with Him and our remembering Him. He's backed it off. He's backed it off to grape juice. He has backed it off to the fruit of the vine. And He says, the fruit of the vine will be sufficient. But we need to understand that He's building upon a practice that involved literal blood. Did He not shed His literal blood on the cross? He shed His literal blood on the cross. And when He instituted the Lord's Supper, He backed it off to the fruit of the vine. But when we take the cup in the Lord's Supper, it is a picture of His literal blood. Now, this practice of cutting a covenant, this practice of sharing blood, or this practice of being in a blood covenant, appears in many different countries through many different centuries. This is a fascinating book. If you get this book by Clay Trumbull, T-R-U-M-P-U-L-L, Clay Trumbull, the Bible will just come alive in wonderful new ways for you. I'm going to read from this book somewhat at length so we understand the seriousness of the blood covenant. Clay Trumbull says that I was talking with an intelligent native Syrian who saw this particular expression of the blood covenant consummated, and that is the term Trumbull uses. He saw this particular method of the blood covenant consummated at the base of the mountains in Lebanon. And so the Jordan Valley, Syria, Lebanon, and we'll find out later in the series, Africa, Europe. The blood covenant is known in all of these cultures. And it comes from God. It all comes from God and what He instituted. And so this man who talked with Clay Trumbull said, these two young men had known each other and been friends for years. But now they were to become brother friends in the covenant of blood. Their relatives and neighbors were called together in the open place before the village fountain to witness the sealing compact. The two young men publicly announced their purpose and their reasons for entering into blood covenant. Their declarations, the reasons, and what they were promising were written down in duplicate. One paper for each friend, and signed by themselves and by several witnesses. Oh my, the book of Hebrews would just explode if you read this book by Trumbull. It was signed by both of the parties and by several witnesses. Now it's going to get rather expensive. I decided to go ahead and read it because I have not understood how very serious people over the ages have viewed the blood covenant. One of the friends took his sharp lancet and opened a vein in the other's arm. Into the opening thus made, he inserted a quill through which he sucked the living blood. Now we just read, except you drink my blood. And I said that our Lord, in His mercy, has backed it off. And we don't have to do it literally. But this is why He said this. The blood covenant was very familiar to the disciples. So the one friend through a quill, sucked the living blood of the other. The lancet blade was carefully wiped on one of the duplicate covenant papers. The blood was wiped on the one paper. And then it was taken by the other friend, who made a like incision in its first user's arm and drank his blood through the quill, wiping the blade on the duplicate covenant record. The two friends declared together, "We are brothers in a covenant made before God. Who deceiveth, or the one who deceiveth the other, him will God deceive." That was the statement, in addition to all the things they'd written down on the pieces of paper that were now sealed with their literal blood. Who deceiveth the other, him will God deceive. Each blood-marked covenant record was then folded carefully to be sewed up in a small leathern case or amulet about an inch square, to be worn thenceforward by one of the covenant brothers. You could wear it. You wore the record of the blood covenant, and it had the stains of the blood of both parties. It was suspended about the neck or bound about the arm in the token of an indissoluble relation. Now, this is the most extreme form of a blood covenant. It was done in other ways, but this is the most extreme form. And so, doesn't it dovetail more when Jesus said, "You need to take part in my blood"? The disciples were aware of these customs. Now, all right. And by the way, The Muslims practice it, but it predates Muhammad for many, many, many years. This is not a Muslim thing, although Muslims, as I've said, Syria, Jordan Valley, Lebanon practice it. It much predates Muhammad. Now, not only can a young man covenant with a young man, but a young man and a young lady can covenant. But watch it now. If a young man, I mean, it is considered to be so serious and so binding, and I hope you'll not find this offensive. I don't think it's indelicate. I just think it shows us the seriousness of a blood covenant and promises. If a young man and young woman enter into blood covenant and they ever marry, their marriage is considered incest. Pretty serious stuff, isn't it? The blood covenant is to take prerogative, and it's indissoluble. And so, and again, I trust you not think me indelicate. It's far more specific in the book. People who are too squeamish and have all these hang-ups about the human body and all this kind of stuff, they'll never really appreciate the Bible the way they could. And so, there in that culture, you have milk brothers. You have milk brothers, or brothers of the breast. I'm sure you can assume what that means. Milk brothers, brothers of the breast. But the most serious brotherhood is the brotherhood of the blood covenant. It's even closer than the milk covenant, even a closer relationship and bond. I'll never be able to see the Lord's Supper in the same way. Now, let's go on. And we're coming now to today's material. Our theme verse is Hebrews 8:6. We're at the top of today's material. Read the verse with me, please. Hebrews 8, 6. Have you got it? The first word is he. Together, he, Jesus, is the mediator of a better covenant. Again, he, Jesus, is the mediator of a better covenant. And in this series, we're looking at covenants, both vertical, our relationship as human beings to God. We're also looking at covenants that are horizontal. Horizontal. Turn to Luke 2. Luke 2, 52. Luke 2, 52. Let's read that together in unison. Luke 2, 52. First word is and. Together. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. Read the last phrase again. Could you read it louder, please? I'd like to hear it. And in favor with God and man. And in favor with God and man. Now, Jesus was the God-man, fully God and fully man. This is the hypostatic union. But in his time on earth, when he was the Word and flesh, Jesus increased in favor in two directions. Jesus increased in favor with God the Father. This was his vertical covenant relationship. And Jesus also increased in his horizontal covenant relationships in favor with God and man. It is God's desire. If you like to fill out blanks, now you get to start. It is God's desire and to our benefit that every person be in an active, pleasing, vertical covenant relationship with himself. It is God's desire and to our benefit that every person be in an active, pleasing, vertical covenant relationship with himself. And we see this codified. We see this codified in Exodus 20. Let's go there. Let's go there. Exodus 20. Now verses 2 through 17 record for us what we call the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments. This is a codification of major expectations in covenant relationships. Now the verses 2 through 11. Verses 2 through 11 give us the first four of the Ten Commandments. It's interesting. It takes a lot more space. It takes a lot more space to describe and amplify the first four commandments, our vertical relationship with God, than is given to our relationship with fellow human beings. And so the first, and I'm in the outline, the first four of the Ten Commandments deal with our relationship with God. The first four of the Ten Commandments deal with our relationship with God. We can only be in a right relationship with God when. And so that phrase is to be understood before the next four points. We're talking about being in a right covenant relationship vertically with God. And so number one, we can only be in a right relationship with God when, number one, we confess God, not God as you perceive him, not God as you understand him, not the Alcoholics Anonymous God, not the God of pluralism, not the God of all roads of sincerity lead to heaven, not that God, but we can only be in a right relationship vertically with the God, when we confess God, the Trinity, the triunity of the Bible, as our only God. Time will not allow us to read the first commandment. I enter this series with the assumption that we have basic Bible knowledge. We can only be in a right relationship with God when we confess God, the triunity of the Bible, as our only God. Exodus chapter 20, verse 3. And then number 2, we can only be in a right relationship with God when we refuse to insult God. We refuse to insult God by reducing Him to the mental constructs of depraved, finite, limited human imagination. Exodus 20, verses 4 through 6. This is the prohibition against making idols. This is the prohibition of making graven images. Now, I like the arts. I like to try. I'm not good, but I like to try to paint. I also like sculpture. But I am fallen. I'm a sinner. Romans chapters 1 through 3 teach that my imagination has fallen. My imagination has been corrupted by the fall. And imagine the insolence. Get this now. Imagine the insolence and the pride of me trying to make an image of God. Would that not be the most cheeky thing you could ever imagine? Right? And would not it be the most cheeky, arrogant, prideful thing you can imagine for you to presume to carve a likeness of God, or to presume to make a likeness of God out of clay or stone? It's prohibited because it's something that grows out of the presumptuous pride of a depraved mind and a fallen imagination. We cannot be in right covenant relationship with God and be so proud of our own imagination that we go around making images of what we think He looks like. Then, number 3, we can only be in a right relationship with God when, number 3, we hold God in respect and reverence, refusing to even get casual or flippant about His name. Dear friends, I'm not as holy as I need to be. I'm a wicked sinner, and I have temptations every day of my life. I'm a wicked sinner. But can you imagine how impossible it is for millions of Americans to be in a right, vertical, covenant relationship with God when so many millions of Americans go around using God's name as a filler? You see these ads for Publishers Clearing House. And probably a third of the people who, you know, the people from Publishers Clearing House run up to the door with the roses and the big check. Probably a third of those who are video recorded for the commercial, the first thing is, oh, G-O-D. And you have a local jeweler. The biggest jeweler in this area uses the OMG on some of his billboards. So the woman gets the diamond, or the woman gets the Pandora necklace or whatever. OMG! We're under the condemnation of God when we talk that way. And you say, well, people don't know. I understand they don't know. That's how far our culture has fallen. And it ought to make us cringe and grieve and hurt every time we hear someone take the name of the Lord our God in vain. He is not a filler. His name is not to be used casually or lightly. We should stop. I saw a preacher a few weeks ago down in Oklahoma. And when he's there on the platform and he's watching people sing or hearing someone preach, his mouth half the time is at a gape. A gape. He sits like this. It's a sense of wonder. I'm not very spiritual. But many, many, many years ago, and most of you could not even possibly know who he is or was. He moved away. We still love him. He's great. He didn't move away because he was angry, but he had a skit he would do about me. And one time I walked into the room, and he was mimicking me. And one of the key ways to mimic Atkinson is to do the same thing. The gaping mouth. I have never lost the wonder of it all. I have never lost the wonder of it all. Since the day that Jesus saved me and a brand new life he gave me, I have never lost the wonder of it all. That was one of Al Smith's favorite songs. There's nothing casual about the blood. There's nothing casual about the name of God. And when I looked at this preacher and saw him sitting there with his mouth half open, I found a friend. Found a friend. We can't be in right vertical relationship with God if we're casual about the things of God, including the name of God. We're not to treat either his name, which represents his person. We're not to treat his name or his person as commonplace. Something you just toss off in everyday conversation. Exodus 27. Then number four, we can only be in right relationship with God when, four, we demonstrate that God is our highest priority by putting him first on our calendar. If we're going to be in right vertical relationship, covenant relationship with God, we must demonstrate that God is our highest priority by putting him first on our calendar. Exodus 20, verses 8 through 11. Notice 1, 2, 3, 4. Four verses. Two of them long. Four verses, two of them long, are given about the commandment against breaking the Sabbath. Oh, you say, preacher, I've got you now. Today is not Shabbat. Today is not the Sabbath. The Sabbath is Saturday. Today is Sunday. We meet on the first day of the week in memory of the resurrection. I know that. But let's not miss the forest for the trees. The principle is we're to give God priority in our calendar. Amen? We're to give God priority in our calendar. And we're here on the Lord's Day, Sunday, remembering that he's risen. I never saw this fourth commandment in this way until I prepared for this series. It's, Paul said that we can get messed up if we place too much importance on days, right? Days and festivals and seasons. But the precept is there. The principle is there. And it's all about giving God priority in our life, which is demonstrated by our calendar. Now, Romans, and I'm going to have to stop. Someone's messing with the clock here. Romans, therefore being justified by faith, we have what? So thank you, Dr. Godfrey. Therefore being justified by faith, we have peace with God. It's talking about our relationship. Paul says we were alienated, separated from God by sin, but after we're justified through the biblical blood covenant, we have peace with God. We have vertical peace. So God has willed, that's the first blank under Romans 5, God has willed and made provision for us to have vertical peace with himself. And then Colossians 2:13-14. Colossians 2:13-14. God's plan is that we might have our trespasses or offenses against him forgiven and be reconciled or restored to harmonious relationship with him by counting ourselves as needing to be included in the forgiveness purchased by Jesus' sacrificial shedding of blood for us. I'll give it again. God's plan is that we might have our trespasses or offenses against him forgiven and be reconciled or restored to harmonious relationship with him by counting, reckoning is the authorized translation's word, by counting or reckoning ourselves as needing to be included in the forgiveness purchased by Jesus' sacrificial shedding of blood.
Isn't that just like the Lord? So very much like Jesus.
Thank you for joining us today. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is graceglory7@juno.com. graceglory7@juno.com. Pastor David M. Atkinson also has a ministry on Facebook and invites you to connect with him there. Now, until the next time, remember to walk softly with the Lord.